Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Robbie Stanley, on your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5.
And welcome into another edition of Preds Insiders here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. As always, I'm your host, Robbie Stanley. Preds Insiders brought to you by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. The Nashville Predators, already a busy week to this point. A 2-1 win against the Calgary Flames on Monday night, and a 2-1 win against Columbus Tuesday night. They'll play against St. Louis tomorrow night on the road as they travel to take on the Blues, and then back at home Saturday night at Bridgestone Arena to take on the LA Kings. So, two games where, I thought Monday night against the Flames, I thought the first period, the Predators were really good. I think that's about as well as they played in a while. In that first period against Calgary, you scored two goals. I thought they were all over the puck offensively, played really well. Even in the second period, I thought they had some good looks offensively, had some good shot attempts. They got outshot 21-5 in the third period. A lot of that came while Calgary was on the power play. But you hold on, you get the 2-1 win, and not only do you get the win against a team that you're directly competing with right now for a playoff spot, a wild card spot in the Western Conference. So I thought, for the most part, pretty good stuff from the Predators on Monday night against Calgary. A little bit less so last night. You do get the win, and that's the most important thing. You take down Columbus. You got outshot 40-28 by the Blue Jackets. John Hines, after the game, was pretty vocal about the power play. He basically said it was terrible without coming out and saying that it was terrible last night. And I think the terms that he used was execution wasn't good. Nothing really was good at all about the power play last night against Columbus. So not a great game. But the one thing that continues to stand out about the Predators is the goaltending. UC Saros right now is on an absolute heater. I mean, there's really no other way to put it. He gave up 5 to Buffalo the other night in a game where the Predators were awful defensively, and they just decided to give up odd man rushes. I believe 14 ended up being the number. 14 odd man rushes they gave up to the Sabres on Saturday night, and that is not a very good formula for success. But he comes right back around, has a great game against Calgary, plays really well, gives up the one goal. And then how about Kevin Lankinen? I got to say, I'm blown away by the way that he's played so far this year. And we talked a lot about Kevin Lankinen on this show, on Robbie and Rex Road. We talked about it when the Predators decided to go that route in the offseason. His numbers were horrible last year in Chicago, and you thought, all right, well, what exactly do the Predators see out of him that maybe the rest of us aren't seeing? And man, has that paid off. He was awesome last night against Columbus. Made some great saves in that game, stopped 39 of the 40 shots. And you look at his numbers for the season. Lankinen has a .281 goals against average and a .918 save percentage. And it's pretty good. He's been pretty good so far for the Predators, about as good as you can expect your backup goaltender to be. And I think that's really important. You're going to have some back-to-back stretches coming down the stretch here if you're the Predators. And even when it's not a back-to-back situation, I know Saros is playing really well right now, and you want to play him as much as you can. You also don't want to drive him completely into the ground. And I'm not saying that he can't handle 65, 70 games, but you don't want to drive him into the ground as the season goes along here. And I think they got to the point last year with David Rittich in goal where they just didn't really feel comfortable having him out there. And based on the way that Kevin Lankinen has played so far this year, I think you have to be comfortable with the way that he's played. So I think it's been really good. And now, as you enter play today, if you're the Nashville Predators, obviously the Predators aren't playing. They'll be back in action tomorrow against St. Louis on the road. But entering NHL play tonight, the Predators are the first team on the outside looking in of the playoff race. Edmonton in the wild card spot with 53 points. Calgary right below them with 51. So a couple of days ago, you were 7 points behind Calgary. Now you're 3 points behind Calgary, and you've got a game in hand. That's a huge win for you against the Flames the other night in regulation. Colorado right behind you if you're the Predators with 47 points. They've got two games in hand on you. And the Blues right behind them as well with 47 points, but they played 45 games. So yet another game coming up tomorrow night for the Predators in St. Louis, where it's a divisional opponent. It's a team that's right there with you in the standings. And if you can win that game, specifically if you can win that game in regulation, it's the classic four-point game, as they say. So a big one coming up against St. Louis and even Saturday against L.A. I know that they're not directly with them right now in the wild card race, but L.A.'s got 56 points. Edmonton's right behind them with 53. Calgary with 51. You're still kind of in a dogfight with teams like the Kings as well, who at some point may end up in the wild card race, and you want to get as many points against them as you can possibly get. So it's a big stretch here from the Predators from that standpoint. They're playing against a lot of teams that are right there with them in the standings, and then you have two big games next week against two good opponents, Winnipeg at home and New Jersey at home, to close things out before the All-Star break comes around. So I know it seems like we're far away from things really ramping up. I mean, the Predators have played 44 games. We're just now getting to the point of the season where we're over halfway. But if you've watched this game long enough and you've been around this game long enough, you know we're getting close to the time where things start to heat up a little bit, both on the ice as you get closer to the playoffs, but also with the NHL trading deadline. And you're going to hear from Predators general manager David Poile a little bit later in the show here today. He joined us for his weekly visit on Robbie and Rex Road, and we talked about a lot of different things with David Poile, including the resurgence of Cody Glass that we've seen lately, which I'll get to here in just a second, and Juuso Parsonen. But we also talked about the trading deadline and what exactly he's looking for from his team beyond the wins and the losses to help him make a decision when the trade deadline comes around. So you hear from David Poile on that front a little bit later. But when you factor in the rest of this week, two games next week, and then it's the All-Star break. Well, I mean, after the All-Star break, you're looking at February the 7th. Right then, you're less than a month away from the NHL trading deadline. So we're very close at this point in the season for things to start to heat up on that front. And I'm really interested to see, number one, what spot do the Predators find themselves in when the NHL trade deadline comes around? And number two, what decision does David Poile decide to make as it relates to how he wants to handle the trade deadline? Do you try to add and maybe push yourself over the top to get into a playoff spot or maintain a playoff spot? Do you sell and maybe keep one eye on the future if you're the Predators? Do you stand pat and do nothing and just see what the roster that you've already put together can do for you and maybe a call-up? Wink, wink, Philip Tomasino at some point. We'll see if that happens. Maybe that's what you're relying on in the second half of the season. I don't know what the approach from the Predators will be, but I'm really interested to see what happens. One thing to me that's been pretty clear, not only so far this week with the games that they played, but really over the course of the past three, 4 weeks with the Predators, has been the emergence of Cody Glass and of Juuso Parsonen. And we're going to be joined by Jeremy K. Gover here in just a few minutes, and we'll talk a little bit more in detail about what we've seen from Cody Glass and Juuso Parsonen. But those two guys have been fantastic. Cody Glass with a goal last night against Columbus. By the way, great play by Philip Forsberg, who basically went left-handed on that play to get the puck over to him. Pretty good stuff from number nine last night. But Cody Glass scores. He was given top-line minutes against Calgary, so you're taking on, you know, the Huberto line, and you're playing with Forsberg and Duchesne. I think he's been really good, and I think some of the things that I'm seeing from Cody Glass from a passing standpoint, from a confidence standpoint, I think is really encouraging if you're a Predators fan as you move forward here. So I'm interested to see what happens on that front. And then Juuso Parsonen had a 7-game point streak, tied Philip Forsberg for the longest point streak by a Predators rookie. Anytime you're in a conversation with Philip Forsberg, it's probably a good thing if you're a member of the Nashville Predators. Those two guys have been really good, and I'm interested to see, number one, if they can keep it up, but number two, if they continue to play this way, do you allow your mind to wonder a little bit of what they could be for you as the future continues to unfold here? Have you found maybe two younger forwards that you could start to build around as you move forward here? Really interested to see if they can keep things up. Speaking of that, coming up next, we will be joined by Jeremy K. Gover, a Nashville correspondent for AP Radio and co-host of the It's All Your Fault podcast with the Nashville Scene. We'll get his thoughts on the Predators. We'll get his thoughts on what he's seen, what his approach at the NHL trading deadline will be, and more. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game, brought to you by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Robbie Stanley here with you as always, and we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line and welcome in our good friend Jeremy K. Gover, a Nashville correspondent for AP Radio, and the co-host of the It's All Your Fault podcast as well with the Nashville Scene. Jeremy, how we doing? What's going on?
Robust. How's it going, man? I appreciate you having me on, and I'm just excited to be here, to be honest.
Well, I'm excited to have you here, and a lot going on with this hockey team to talk about, and a lot from the standpoint of they've been on again, off again, on again a little bit lately with the way that they've played as far as the results are concerned. And we're also, I know it seems like we are far away, but we're really not that far away, Jeremy, from the NHL trade deadline coming up on March the 3rd, especially when you factor in that there's an all-star break, and pretty soon after that, it's hot and heavy to the trade deadline. Let's start with just the way that they're playing right now. You felt like they were playing really well a couple of weeks ago. They started off a road trip 3-0. They had won 4 in a row, and then they dropped 3 in a row to close out the road trip, and then the first game of the homestand against Buffalo this past Saturday night. And now they picked it right back up, and they beat Calgary 2-1 on Monday, and they beat Columbus 2-1 last night. What do you make of the way that the Predators are playing and kind of the up-and-down nature from them that we've seen really all season long, but especially lately?
Yeah, I'm going to do you one better here, Robin, before I answer your question. On the latest It's All Your Fault podcast, which you plugged at the top of the show, and at the top of the segment, and I appreciate that, I broke this down. I'm going to break it down for you because I love you. Here we go. So this is the entire Preds season all in blocks, okay? They were 2-0-0 in Europe. They come home to North American soil, and over those first eight, they were 1-6-1. And they go out west, and they have their first and only, to this point, kind of 500 stretch. They were 2-2-0. Then things go on a roller coaster. 7-1-1 over the next 3 weeks. 0-4-2 the six following that. 7-1-2 in their next nine following those six. Then they the skid you talked about, 0-3-0 in the next three, which, by the way, one of those losses was to Montreal, which is not good.
Not good.
And then now they're 2-0-0. So is this the start of another upward swing? This is what the frustration is, I believe, from the Predators fan base, is that they don't know who this team is. Okay, so you have these great runs, 7-1-1, in 3 weeks, and then they go 0-4-2, and then the next 7-1-2. Those two, the 7-1-1 and 7-1-2, those two blocks right there of nine games, those are playoff teams. So that's a playoff team playing that well. But then you have the 0-4-2 and the 0-3-0, which booked in those, and you're like, well, that's a lottery pick. So nobody knows, I don't think, what this team is. Are they a point-per-game player, Philip Forsberg, Matt Duchene, Roman Josi, stellar Vezina-caliber goaltending from UC Saros? Is it that team? Or is it a team that can't score life on the play for losing games because of it and giving up 60 shots a game? whatever the example was. I think that's the issue right now with the Predators, is nobody knows what this team is. And that parlays into your next question, or your second part of your question, which was the trade deadline. This is a team where if I'm the general manager, if I'm David Poile, I don't know what way to go. I probably lean towards selling. Maybe a piece, and probably just one single piece, probably, because you don't want to, shoot yourself in the foot for next season. Because, again, this team has shown in flashes, and they have the talent up front, albeit a small portion of talent, but they do have the talent up front to be a playoff team. Their defense is with McDonough and Josi and Ekholm. Those are great pieces. And then, of course, you have Saros, like I mentioned. And then Lankinen, who, by the way, is really shoring up that backup role. And you have a scar off coming up, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, in a minute. But the point of saying all that is that you don't want to completely gut this thing, and then next season you're behind the eight ball when you normally wouldn't have been. But I will say that this is a huge question mark. What are the Predators going to do at the deadline? Are they going to add one piece, maybe a scoring power play specialist or something, or are they going to sell one or two pieces, like a Colton Sissons type of, a very affordable contract. Any team would love to have him up and down the lineup. Now, are you going to get the King's ransom for Colton Sissons? No. But I'm just saying, those kinds of things. Are you going to do that? What is the strategy going into the trade deadline? And I think based on the records I just gave you in those blocks, I don't think they know.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. One thing that's also caught my attention lately, and I think has been on full display this week, Juuso Parsonen and Cody Glass are playing really well right now. And those are two younger guys down the middle that not only this year have kind of grown into a role, but I watch those two guys play right now, Jeremy, and I think to myself, well, what could that mean for them long term? Not only just this year, but as they move forward. We know about Cody Glass. We've talked about it till we're blue in the face. He was drafted sixth overall. You're talking about a high draft pick. It never worked out with Vegas. It got off to a really slow start here, And it seems like he's starting to figure some things out, playing right now on the line with Forsberg and Duchesne. And then there's Parsonen, who was a seventh-round pick, which basically nobody found him, and the Predators took a flyer on him late, and he has turned into a guy that I watch him play. I watch him skate. I look at the size that he has, the offensive instincts that he has, and I think to myself, like, that guy could be a top-six forward. I mean, that guy could absolutely be a top-six centerman for you as you move forward here. So, number one, what do you make of the way that those two guys have played? And number two, how much of the way that they played to this point maybe allows you to start to think about what they could be as you think about the future with Parsonen and Glass?
Well, if you're the Predators, I think because you're into these contracts, they're $8, $7 million a year with other players, right? Forsberg, Duchesne, Bronlund, you know, Yossi, et cetera, of course. So, Ekholm, because you have these contracts already, I think you are salivating at the fact that you're going to have some rookie or at least early deals on two guys that can play for you long-term, right? And so I think from the salary cap standpoint, I think it's incredibly important to have found diamonds in the rough, if you will, on Parsonen and Glass. To answer your first question, I love the way they both play. I think Cody Glass has really come into his own over the past, I'll say, month, you know, 5 weeks, something like that. And I think that's a direct result of Matt Duchesne mentorship. I don't have any information as far as whether Matt Duchesne has taken him under his wing or not, but I can tell you that the eye test, when I watch Cody Glass play, I see a ton of Matt Duchesne influence. The skating is similar. He's now trying moves that only Matt Duchesne really tries, like the stutter step and then the breakout to the half wall. Like those kinds of things. So Forsberg doesn't, but he does it in a more creative, kind of fluid way. But Duchesne, he is an extremely elite skater, and he uses that to his advantage. Cody Glass is starting to do those things. And I think that is just being around Matt Duchesne, now being, of course, on a line with him, I think that's only going to prove fruitful for Cody Glass and his trajectory in the NHL. Will he be a 60-point guy? That. But he'd definitely be a 40-point guy. And I think if you're the Predators, I think you take that, especially since you jettisoned the Ryan Ellis, an injured, oft-injured Ryan Ellis. You couldn't count on being in the lineup. You jettisoned him for, essentially, Cody Glass. And now to get a reward out of that is a big deal. So that's a feather in their cap. Parsonen might be even a bigger feather, because you're right. I can see him being a top-six guy also. Maybe not a top-line guy, but it's early. You never know. He could be the next Ryan Getzlaf for all we know. But I love the way he plays. He's kind of he's size, which I think Fred Long will say, oh, he's big. So what? He was terrible. So size doesn't mean everything. Mike Rathje, if you're going for the old-school hockey fans, huge, right? Huge guy, 6'5", 230, right? Big frame, didn't want to hit anybody. So size means nothing to me. But tenacity does. And when you hit the ice every single shift and you are noticeable in a positive way every single shift and you have size, now we're talking. So Parsonen, I really, really like. Again, setting up for success as far as salary cap goes. And Glass hopefully has found his stride because he's working with Matt Duchesne.
Jeremy K. Gover with us here on Preds Insiders. So, Jeremy, you know this. We have seen stretches of goaltending around here over the course of the past 15 years that have been pretty darn good from Pekka and now from UC Saros. And this is not the first time that UC Saros has gone on a stretch where he's played pretty well. I do think when you look at the numbers over the course of the past month, and obviously the Carolina game sticks out when he made 64 saves, like, I think you can make a case that UC Saros right now at this moment is playing just about as well as he's played throughout the course of his NHL career so far. What do you make of the way that he's played? You brought up Kevin Lankinen and the way that he's played. And I'll take it big picture conversation on you. You do have Askarov in the pipeline, and he made his NHL debut last week, and I think it's good for him to be in Milwaukee this year and for him to get as much experience and playing time as he can get. But at some point, he's going to be ready, and it's not like UC Saros is going to be, you know, out of the prime of his career anytime soon. What do you do if you're the Predators with your goaltending situation as you move forward?
Yeah, so just to address that last part, Saros will be 28 in April. Okay, so he's still very much at the prime of his career. And he got a late start. So if you're looking at, you know, like we talk about running backs all the time, right? Oh, well, did they take a beating early in their career? Or were they, you know, what's their shelf life, right? Well, okay, so Saros got a late start. He wasn't a starter in this league until probably, what, 3.5 years ago?
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he, you know, he wasn't like he came in like Carey Price, 20 years old, starter, let's go, right? It wasn't like that. So you kind of think that Soros's peak, his kind of the peak of his career probably ends, and that use that very loosely, around 33 years old. And so that means you have another 5 good years out of this kid. So that's dilemma number one. But to answer your first question is that Soros is playing tremendous. He's only got 3 regulation losses, Robbie, since December 19th.
Yeah.
That's like Booker.
Okay? Well, with the times, very little goal support tossed on with that, yeah.
Yes, that's right, yeah. And we've talked about that on the podcast, too. This and on the show with you, actually, is that if your goaltender, okay, has a save percentage, which Soros does, of .921, but more importantly, has a goals against average of .268, you win 7 out of 10 games. Because that means all you have to do is score, that's all you have to, like it's easy, all you have to do is score 3 goals. If your goaltender can keep you under 3 goals every single game, you have a chance to win more often than not. As a matter of fact, you probably should win more often than not.
Yep.
So Soros is giving them that chance. The key to this whole question, though, Robbie, is Lankinen. Last year with Riddick, there was no confidence, I don't think, in the Predators, especially the fan base, but the Predators in throwing Riddick out there. If there's a set of back-to-backs, you're not just saying, that's a loss. You're not saying that wouldn't go that far, but you're like, okay, well, we've really got to button down, play really well, and get 7 goals. Like, you know, there's more to it. Whereas with Lankinen, you feel like he has solidified that backup role where you feel like, okay, we have a chance to win any game. And I think that's a huge deal. So, yes, he had heroics last night, and that's great. You know, he basically won that game, as crazy as that sounds, against Columbus, one of the worst teams in the league. He won that game by himself, but at the end of the day, he has given you a chance to win every single night that he plays, and I think that's a huge, huge deal. Real quickly, to answer the question about the trade, the Askarov thing, it was wonderful to see him play, not only because it was exciting to see him play, but also because you could see his personality. And that's something you don't say about goaltenders usually on the ice, let alone their NHL debut.
That kid's fun, man.
He's ridiculously fun. He's kind of overreacting, I would say. Like, he's overexcited to handle the puck. I would say that. But he's not skilled at it. He did a shoulder drop on a forechecker, and then he bit left, and so he passed it right. I mean, and the poise and confidence in that, that's only going to serve him well going forward. In my opinion, they make a critical decision at the next deadline. Is Soros the guy that you're willing to ride with? Again, because you mentioned he's in the prime of his career still. Or do you trade him for a king's ransom and go with Askarov and go with the future and just sink or swim? Or do you trade Askarov for maybe a little bit less than a king's ransom and keep Soros because he's your guy? Their assets in goal are just incredible, barring no injury, of course. Like, barring injury, of course. They have some tough decisions to make, I'd say, over the next year and a half.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. Real quickly on Askarov, I was at a development camp practice, and I saw that dude within a span of about 2 minutes. I looked to my right, and he was about on almost like the blue line, stacking the pads, challenging a puck. And then like a minute and a half later, he threw a blind no-look pass behind the net to clear the puck out of the zone. I was like, well, look, man, I don't know how good this kid's going to be, but I can guarantee you he's going to be fun, and I'm looking forward to watching that as his career continues to develop here. Real quickly, as we look ahead here at the roster and some of the decisions that we've talked about, Jeremy, I realize that sometimes the unknown is undefeated, and people, they yell about prospects and people in Milwaukee all the time, why is such and such not up? And I get that. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. I've been pretty consistent on this. Like, I thought it was a mistake to send Philip Tomasino down to Milwaukee to begin the season. And I certainly didn't think that over halfway through the season he'd still be down there. He's been playing really well as of lately. Why have they not brought him up, in your opinion? And how quickly do you think they should consider bringing up Philip Tomasino to add to this group?
The crazy thing about this is I think until there's an injury, they're not pressured to.
Yeah.
Like, yes, they're not scoring as much as, you know, they would like, for sure. But they're also not in a dire situation. Yeah, I know they're outside the playoff bubble and all that. But they are within striking distance, and they are riding this roller coaster we talked about earlier in the segment. So until there's an injury, I don't think they're pressured to bring him up. I think they're content with letting him stay down there at the AHL level, playing all different positions. Situations. And, you know, and then he gets his ultimate confidence, comes up, and he's got that fire under his butt, right? He's just so pissed off and ready to go, you know, to show that he belongs. And I think it's, You know, I mean, now, again, you can make an argument that people, sometimes players go a little over, they get overzealous in that regard. But I think he would have, he's, having been in the NHL before last season, I think he's going to be primed for a breakout. But that being said, that's not inside information, Robbie. I have no idea why Tomasino, and I was very vocal about it as well at the beginning of the season, that he, why is he in Milwaukee? It must have been an attitude issue. I was assured by a source in, that it was not an attitude issue. And so he's almost a point-per-game player in the AHL right now. He should be up in the NHL, but I think until there's an injury, you know, because, again, you don't want him playing the Cole Smith role, right? Like, you, some people are like, oh, just take Cole Smith out of the lineup, and there you go. Okay, well, that's fair, I suppose. But you don't want him playing a Cole Smith role. You want him playing in top 6 minutes, or at the very least, top nine.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's a spot for him right now because they love Cole Smith so much, because they're not losing every game. And I think that's probably the bottom line, is there's just no injury yet.
Jeremy K. Gover with us here on Preds Insiders. Jeremy, last thing for you here, and this is a really fascinating question to me because I think it's something that David Poile is going to have to figure out. To me, when they made the move this past offseason to go get Ryan McDonagh, that signaled to me that this was going to be the last year where both Alex Carrier and Dante Fabbro were on the roster at the same time. They both, you're going to have to figure out their contracts at the end of this year. Carrier has been in the top four. He's been with Ekholm for most of the season when he's been healthy. Fabbro has basically been on the third pair for the most part, and even a couple of weeks ago found himself out of the lineup as a healthy scratch. So if you're David Poile, what do you do? And you talk about the deadline coming up. Would you consider moving Dante Fabbro at this trade deadline coming up by March the 3rd, or would you wait and make that decision until after the season?
I think it depends on the return, right? I mean, this, in my opinion, Fabbro is a guy who can slot into the second pairing on, let's just say, 17 teams around the league, right? So if you have an injury in your defense core and you're a playoff team and you need a guy right now who can play, Fabro's your guy, right? Carrier, I would actually argue, is the same. There's maybe more offensive upside there with Carrier. But neither one of these guys is showing out. So what's the value going to be? Are you going to flip Fabbro for a fifth-round pick? I mean, is that really what you want to get? So I don't know. I mean, it's a tough decision. I agree with you, by the way. I heard you say this on Rodman Rexroad as well a few days ago, is that I don't think there is a scenario where Fabbro and Carrier are both on this team next year. I think this is their last year. If not both of them, definitely one of them. And I think you try to get what you can at the deadline, but if it's just a fifth-round pick, I think you ride with it and then just let the chips fall where they may, because, I don't know, Fabbro to me is worth more. Now, he's not worth a ton, but he's worth more to, again, 17 teams right around the league. Maybe let's just call six of them true contenders who want to load up. Maybe they have an injury at defense. Fabbro can plug right in and be a player for you. So all it takes is one. But, you know, in these negotiation things, it takes two, really, because you got to get value out of it. So I agree. Fabbro or Carrier are gone, one of them, if not both of them. And I would take the deadline, but, again, it just depends on the return.
Jeremy K. Gover, our guest here on Preds Insiders, Nashville correspondent for AP Radio and co-host of the It's All Your Fault podcast with the Nashville Scene. Jeremy, great stuff as always. Thanks for being with us this evening, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Jeremy K. Gover, our guest on Preds Insiders. Coming up next, you'll hear from Nashville Predators general manager David Poile about his approach to the trading deadline and maybe some decisions he has to make as the trading deadline approaches coming up on March the 3rd. We'll get into all that and more coming up next. This is Preds Insiders here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley here with you. David Poile joined us earlier this week on Robbie and Rex Road for his weekly visit. Here was part of that conversation with Nashville Predators general manager David Poile. Predators general manager David Poile with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, David, I mean, obviously after a player gets traded, there's an adjustment period that takes place for everybody, and that adjustment period is different for different people. With Ryan McDonagh and playing alongside Roman Josi over the course of the past few weeks, with the way that he's played, is this what you envision from him once you made the trade with Tampa Bay?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's our top pair now, with Josi playing over on the right side, and McDonagh's, you know, gets the tougher minutes where he doesn't play on the power play. But he gets all the penalty-killing minutes, and last night on a 5-on-3, which was certainly good changed the game when we had two men in the penalty box there in the third period. You know, he was part of two or three guys that did a great job, and there was a couple of shot blocks that, you know, it takes talent and skill to get there, and then for sure it takes a lot of courage to get in front of somebody's slap shot. And, you know, he sacrificed again last night, and one of the key reasons why we held on to that 2-1 win. So, you know, again, the bigger the games get, the better I think McDonough plays. And, you know, all he probably cares about right now is find a way for the Preds to get to the playoffs. And let's see what can happen.
David, it's some interesting comments yesterday from John Hines talking about UC Saros and about how he has emerged and kind of improved at, you know, playing the puck. That was an offseason point of emphasis. Obviously, we all know what Pekka used to do, you know, around the net. How have you seen that evolve from him? And I guess just where do you think he is right now as a player relative to other great stretches of his career?
It's hard to think that there's anything but saying that he is having the best stretch of his career. And I mean, right now he's the best goaltender in the National Hockey League. Last year he was one of three for the Vezina, which is the trophy for the best goaltender in the league. And he's playing, you know, fantastic. I mean, his quickness, I don't know. He just does something, you know, better every night. And I know it's the cliche of all cliches, but talk about somebody giving you a chance to win. You know, he's been just spectacular. As you mentioned, you know, Pekka was really good, you know, handling the puck. That has not been Juice's strength, though. He's been more aggressive, you know, to stop those pucks behind the net and to try to make some plays to either a defense or forwards. And, you know, that's just part of the maturity of his game and, you know, just doing those things more. But the main thing I like is he stops the puck a lot. And you can see that with his save percentages, you know, one of the highest of all the goalies in the league now. You know, for a team that's, you know, we haven't, you know, we need to be more productive. We have to bring some more offense. And if we can get that going with Juice and net, we get a good chance to win every night.
David Poile with us here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Coleman Tractor in Tennessee, Tennessee's largest Kubota dealer. So, David, we talked to you last week about the trading deadline and, you know, how maybe it's too early to get an accurate sense for what exactly that's going to look like, especially with the cap situation. I am curious, though, like beyond the obvious of the wins and the losses, when you're at a spot where you guys are at the standings right now, what as a general manager are you looking at beyond the wins, beyond the points, that helps you determine the direction you're going to go once the trade deadline does come around?
Well, I think the job of the manager is obviously you have your day-to-day, you know, preparation, you know, goals, what you're trying to accomplish, and then that goes for specifically for this season. And then I think there's always planning for the future. I'm a guy that really likes to look at a 3 to 5 year plan in terms of, you know, what we have, what we need, all those different situations. We just had our scouting meetings that we have. It seems like most teams have them at this time of year. It's kind of a combination on the pro side for the preparation for the trading deadline and also for July 1st, which is free agency. And it's also for the amateurs side getting ready for the entry draft. So, you know, with all my people, if you will, management and our scouts, I mean, we go over a lot of things like that in terms of the, you know, carving out a specific direction of the club and what our goals are, what our needs are, all those types of things. So specifically to your beginning of your question, like when you asked last week about the trading deadline, I think that's still way too early. I mean, you're always open to doing something. And I guess if you're trying to do something, you'd like to be one of the first ones that can do that. This year is going to be difficult, like I said last year, because of how many teams are so close to the cap. And then the second thing, of course, is the parity part, where, you know, there's, you know, how many, you know, sellers are there versus how many buyers are there. And to me, it's, you know, come to the trading deadline, where are we going to be? You know, right now we're like 3 or 4 points, you know, behind the teams that are in the playoffs. I feel that we'll probably be 3 or 4 points in the playoffs, or maybe 3 or 4 points out of the playoffs at the trading deadline. So it's not going to be really, really a clear picture. So I think in doing this show, you probably should ask me every week that question. But I don't think there's going to be anything that's going to happen too significantly until after the All-Star break. And that's pretty soon. I mean, you got, you know, a couple of weeks here, then we go have the All-Star game, and then I think that we come back and play like February 7th. Then you have like just a little under maybe a 3.5 weeks to go, and I think that's when the action will start picking up in a more serious vein.
Okay, I have another weekly question for you, David. Philip Tomasino playing well in Milwaukee. What, any new thoughts on him potentially being in this lineup?
I would say that's on my mind every day also, in terms of time and the place. And, you know, a few things are in my head too. If we're going to do this, like I'm trying to say this in the right way, like there's some people that you call up and it's just to fill in a little bit, and then you send them, you know, back down, and it's not a thought process in terms of a full-time situation. I think in treating, you know, Phil Tomasino, when we do this, and I don't want to be totally held to what I'm going to say right now, but it would be better if we could bring him up and keep him up. You know, that's what I would be thinking, to play him in a full-time position. And also, I'd like to play him in a higher position than where he played last year. So, you know, he's got to keep playing well, and then we have to, you know, commit to, you know, being able to give him that opportunity on a more of a full-time basis. So, you know, when that's going to happen, I'm not sure, but it's a nice player to have, if you will. You know, when you talk about the trading deadline, like, why go out and acquire, say, a forward when we have a Phil Tomasino that we have to give an opportunity to?
David Poile, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Tuesday morning at 8:30. David, as you said, lots of hockey to be played. Back at it tonight at Bridgestone Arena. Appreciate you making time to join us this morning, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Coming up next, it's time for another edition of Keezer's Corner with Nick Keezer. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, brought to you by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. And it's time for another edition of Keezer's Corner with Nick Keezer. Nick, take it away.
Thanks, Robbie. Glad to be here with you this evening on another edition of Preds Insiders. And before I get started, I want to provide an update, because I guess I'm reporter Nick now, but really I owe it to our friend Elliot Friedman, who joins our midday show every Thursday at 1 p.m. Elliot reported that Predators forward Michael McCarron is returning to play, and now he's on waivers. But really what that means, Preds fans, is if he's on waivers, he's going down to Milwaukee so he can get some ice time. It's been about 2 months since he has actually skated, from what I've heard. So, with him getting some time down in Milwaukee, that's a lovely sign to have. And I know that another guy we're waiting on is Mark Borowiecki, but he is still far from getting back on the ice with the Nashville Predators in a contact capacity. I highly doubt we see him anytime soon. But Michael McCarron, he was put on the NHL Player Assistance Program around the same time that Ellie Tolvanen was placed on waivers. So remember, those two things coincided with where the Predators wanted to go at that time. They had to keep McCarron scratched every single game while he was in the Player Assistance Program, so he got paid, from what I understand. So, with that being said, now that Elliot has said that McCarron will be returning to play, he's on waivers, he'll go down to Milwaukee, and hopefully by 1 p.m. tomorrow, we'll know exactly if McCarron is going down to the AHL, because he's on waivers. Someone else can get him if they wanted to. And will he be back in the lineup at all this year? I'm sure he will. I know that we've switched some forwards out. Maybe some Preds fans would like to see McCarron in there for a guy like Cole Smith, who just has not scored at all. But may I remind you, another gentleman that has not scored a lot since early on in the season is Tanner Jeannot. Tanner, as a matter of fact, on the show this evening, to be precise, Tanner has not scored since the Preds played the St. Louis Blues. I know I've already said this before on this program, when he scored last, but he scored against the Blues back on October 27th this season. So that has now been 83 days ago since he has scored a goal in the NHL. and it will now be his 36th game when they play the Blues again tomorrow evening. So could he eventually score against the Blues for the second time this year? That would be a great time to break the streak, if I may say so, Robbie. So ultimately, that's a guy we need to have breakthrough in the lineup, and maybe he does it again against the St. Louis Blues. But I want to transition over to a guy that has been playing well for the Nashville Predators. He has 10 points in his last 15 games, that being Cody Glass. Cody Glass has been a guy that has resurged in the lineup since he was in training camp and had a bunch of cameras around him, and I thought that was interesting that he brought that up post-game after the Predators took down the Columbus Blue Jackets 2-1. Cody Glass was asked about his confidence, and I'm really just waiting for him to continue to be this consistent. You know, he's been a good forward for us this year, but after the game against the Blue Jackets, like I said, he was asked about the confidence that he has this year. Here's Cody Glass.
I think just kind of being more loose. I think that's a big thing. I think I was kind of stressed out at the beginning of the year. You know, in training camp, I had a bunch of cameras around me. And then, you know, going, being scratched, that kind of stuff. I was just putting a lot of pressure on myself. And the guys have done a really good job talking to me and kind of making me feel at ease. So it's been really nice having just a good group around me that really helped me kind of find my game. And if I can just be more consistent and help this team win, it's a goal for me.
So with that being said, Cody Glass has had a lot of confidence lately. And that is a great thing to hear, especially coming after a game where he did score a goal. I also think he should have got a goal the other night against the Flames. I really think Roman Josi's shot was deflected by Cody Glass. Nonetheless, the Preds won that game 2-1 as well. So yeah, that's a great sign to have if you're the Nashville Predators. Also, Juuso Parsonen's point streak ended last night. It was sitting at 7 games. He could have gotten to 8 games and made franchise history that way. But it's okay. He tied the record. It previously belonged to Philip Forsberg, who I believe had around 13 points in 7 games when he was with the Predators back in 2014. So those two guys have been tearing it up lately for the Nashville Predators. And like I said, we want to see more consistency from those guys. So that's going to be a great piece to have. I also know that for myself, when I look at those two guys, I always think in the back of my head, this is a great glimpse into the future for the Nashville Predators if we can keep guys like this. You know, I always talk to people here at 102.5 about the Predators kind of stink here lately and whatnot, but let me tell you this. We have a lot of guys that have been stepping up lately in very different ways. It may not exactly show in our record and, you know, some small stats here and there, but I've been very happy with what we have seen. And one guy is Kevin Lankinen as well. Kevin Lankinen had 39 saves last night against the Columbus Blue Jackets. If you combine the saves that we had in the back-to-back, there were 77 of them, and 2 goals were allowed. If you ask me, that's a great tandem to have here in the NHL as of late. So I cannot complain about any of those guys right now. And if you look at the grand scheme of things too, I know Preds fans are also frustrated with how we are bringing up talent through our organization. One thing I noticed about that is we have drafted 69 guys, so 69 prospects have come through the Nashville Predators organization one time or another since 2013 when we drafted Seth Jones. Now, in the last 5 years, only 2 of those guys have made it to the NHL. And I heard this from Barry Trotz about what he has done previously and what I believe his philosophy still is about guys playing down in the AHL. Here's Barry Trotz.
I think, you know, for me, to overcook a player in the minors is probably better when they come up there. They're more capable of dealing with the emotion of success or not having success. They've earned it, all those type of things. So because once a player gets into the league, emotionally, when you have to send them back after a year of playing in the National Hockey League, everybody's going, well, what happened? Why, you know, what went wrong? What'd you do?
So that was Barry Trotz on the Predators official podcast with Darren McFarland. And I thought that was interesting. And the reason being is the Nashville Predators have not really been great handling those prospects, albeit there have been some great ones that have come through, you know, i.e. Philip Tomasino. And then you also have a guy like Cody Glass, but we didn't draft Cody Glass. And aside from Cody Glass coming up through the AHL with the Milwaukee Admirals, Juuso Parsonen played some last year, but he only played 10 games in Milwaukee this year. But nonetheless, I'm happy to see that. And I want to end my time here in Keezer's Corner just rolling off a few stats for our listeners. Here this month, the Nashville Predators are sixth in penalty kill at 85%. They are first in time shorthanded this month. 35 times we have gone to the penalty box being shorthanded. Not a great stat if you want to continue to be a winning and successful team here at the NHL level. Also, the Nashville Predators power play is 23rd since the beginning of the year, 2023, 14%, 4 for 28 overall. And the Nashville Predators are also fourth overall in total shots, 289, and also fourth overall in total 5-on-5 shots with 22. And the Preds have been averaging 3.11 goals per game, 9 games so far this month. Robbie, those are just a few things that I have seen as far as Nashville Predators go here in the last week or so. Looking forward to seeing how they can continue to either keep this trend or maybe digress. We'll see how they do. We'll see how John Hines keeps getting this group ready night in and night out. This has been another edition of Keezer's Corner.
Thanks, Nick. That's going to do it for us today here on Preds Insiders. We'll be back next week. Preds back in action tomorrow as they take on the St. Louis Blues. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.